Welcome to a special double feature of Drive Time, our UCLA Anderson FEMBA podcast. I'm Dylan Stafford, and today, in honor of FEMBA Palooza 5, you get a double feature. First, we have a brief but important interview with Christy Marquez, our associate director and the person in charge of FEMBA Palooza. My interview with Christy is then followed by this week's podcast with Victor Gebhardt, 2018. Victor's story is kind of amazing. He is a successful entrepreneur, and he is going to do something with his summer quarter after his first year that no one else has ever done in FEMBA. He is going to enter the 10,000-mile Mongol Rally before the start of fall quarter. He and two friends are going to drive from London, England to Mongolia. That's a 10,000-mile trip, and they're going to make it in a 1-liter engine car, and they're going to raise £1,000 for charity. This is an amazing story. They're going to have a website. It's called friskydingo.rocks, and I'll put the link in the notes for this podcast, and you'll be able to follow Victor and his team and their journey over the course of the summer. So that's today's podcast, but the double feature is what we're doing right here, right now. So here with me in podcast studio land is Christy Marquez. Now, most of you know Christy because she runs the coffee chats and she's our primary travel recruiter. She goes to all the places up and down the West Coast, does a lot of corporate visits. So many of you met Christy when you applied or you've met her since. So that's how you know her. I know Christy is a key leader on our team. She is one of the people who really makes everything that we do that works, work. So in addition to all her regular duties, we came up with this Palooza idea four summers ago. And we've had 500 people come the first year, 700 the second year, 800 the third year. Last year, over 1,000 people attended FEMBA Palooza 4, and we're going to surpass that this year. So what you don't know is how much work is in the background. And Christy knows that because she's in charge. So thank you for being here, Christy.
Thank you for having me, Dylan. It's exciting.
It's Wednesday before FEMBA Palooza 5. You've got lanyards and t-shirts and a gazillion organizing details with the Fembassadors. So thank you for carving out 10 minutes for this. And I promised you it wouldn't take long. And the question I wanted to ask, so, I mean, you may get lost in the details because there's so much work that you do that people can't even see, but you've also had the opportunity to attend every single FEMBA Palooza. So tell me, like, what do you like about this big effort that we put on for our students and alumni each year?
Yeah, well, what I like about FEMBA Palooza is the fact that it's such a huge event that is not only for students and alumni, but also for their family. You know, I think that making time for including family, you know, and in their educational experience and networking is key, because you want to make sure that everyone stays engaged and feels that they are able to include the people they love. So the fact that people are able to network in a casual setting, outdoors, it just makes it such a unique experience. So I really think that the whole family and coming together aspect of it is what makes it what it is and such a success.
I love that. Yeah, it's a special, it's not your typical NBA event.
No.
People are wearing shorts. They smell like suntan lotion. Uh-huh. You know, we have good food. And this year we're going to have the Fembale.
Fembale, yep.
One of our entering students is a master brewer and is going to provide the libations. Like, I love those little miracles that we have every year. There's always something new. We have the face paint lady coming for the kids with the bounce house. That's one of our treats.
And the balloon lady. She's amazing. She can make anything out of balloons. You ask for anything, literally, like a rocket ship. She'll make you like a rocket ship or a rocket backpack, whatever you want. She's pretty amazing. So make sure to stop by.
Yeah, if you have little ones, bring them along. And then for the grown-ups, the beer garden and the opportunity zone, how many clubs do we have this year?
This year, we actually have about 23 clubs participating, which is like over double what we had last year. So there's really something for everybody.
Yeah, and we have double the number of entrepreneurs. And then with our Learning on the Lawn, tell people a little bit about, because the Fembassador, the organizing committee, has just gone crazy this year. So how many Learning on the Lawn sessions?
Yeah, so this year there's 8 Learning on the Lawn sessions. And so pretty much every half hour, a different guest speaker, including faculty, staff, current students, and alumni will be talking about an interesting topic, giving advice on a certain topic, or doing a mini lecture. So there will be plenty of opportunity to learn while having fun in the sun. So,
and yeah, I love that because it's not just a party. You know, we also have some educational content, you know, something, little tips and tricks. Professor Shi, Margaret Shi, who is accountable obviously for FEMBA and the full-time program, she's doing learning on the lawn. Gonzalo Frasius is going to tell our alumni and our internationally minded people how to really grow their business, or entrepreneurs, I should say, how to grow their business on internationally. And then we have current and alumni. We have David Cooley, the director of career services, our very own career services for alumni, and our very own Matt Gorlick is going to give an alumni perspective and really talk about his hard right pivot from Disney to now being, you know, one of the co-leaders of our team. So now, in terms of attendance, we've had the registration open for a month or so. We're about 102 RSVPs below last year. It just jumped up another 100 in the last 24 hours. I've bet Gonzalo, Dean Frasius, I've bet him a cortado that we're going to surpass last year's numbers. So you guys who are listening, you can help us win our bet by, if you're sitting on the fence and you haven't registered yet, sign up, for God's sake. We want you there on Sunday. So, you know, why should people jump in and register? I think you've probably said a lot of that, but, you know, what is it that if you just haven't, oh, I'm busy or this or that, why should people take some time out of their life and be with us Sunday afternoon? What would you tell them?
Well, I would say, well, number one, why not?
It's exactly.
Free food, free parking, free beer and wine, and just a lot of fun.
Why isn't everyone registered?
Know, right?
We're baffled here. Come
I
on. Every single person should
I don't
be.
Get it. So definitely that, I mean, how can you turn that down? And then aside from that, I really think that, you know, people don't really understand how much fun it's going to be till they're there. And they just realize, like, wow, like, this is like no other event I've ever attended at UCLA Anderson. So just come, you know, come by. You don't have to stay the whole time. Just stop by, say hello, and get some good food and beer.
And share some cards and just open up some horizons.
Get to know some people and help welcome the new incoming class of 2019 and congratulate the class of 2016 for their graduation. It's a big celebration, a big party together, you know?
Yeah. The class of 2016, they went to the second FEMBA Palooza, and now they've already walked across the stage a month ago. It's amazing.
Crazy.
So you've been at all four of them. You've been there since the inception, and you're making it great today. You probably have more than one, but if you could tell people like a top FEMBA Palooza moment, what would you, if you, as you look back at all of them, what's something that stands out for you?
Yeah, I think there's probably a couple. One that really stands out to me is the time that we actually planned FEMBAPALOOZA on the final World Cup game.
Oh, yeah, that was an accident.
I think it was like 2 years ago. And when we realized that, we're like, oh, my God, we have to somehow air this game at FEMBAPALOOZA. So it was kind of a scramble last minute to figure out how to provide or get cable or, you know,
a satellite feed. I don't know how you pulled that off.
I don't know, but it was crazy. It was kind of very last minute, but it all worked out. And in the end, people were just sitting around together, watching the final game and cheering together. So it just added this whole extra level of excitement to the day. So that was really fun. Another moment was last year, actually, when we had Joe and Josie Bruin lead the eight. Clap.
That's right, because so, at the group photo, we got not everybody. Some people stay in the beer garden, but we got a lot of people out on the big lawn.
Yeah, so that was fun, getting everybody together and doing the eight clap together with Josie Bruin leading us. That was just a classic UCLA moment.
Yeah, oh, that really was. Yeah, with Royce Hall in the background. Oh, I love that. I love that. Well, thank you, Christy, on behalf of, you know, I don't know, 2,000-3,000 people who've attended by the time we get done on Sunday, because Christy is really, you're the person. You know, we have tremendous support from our, we have a half the staff here at Anderson help out. We have a tremendous planning committee on the staff side. And then every year, our ambassadors just amaze us with their contributions. But you are the linchpin who holds it all together. So thank you for your contribution to building just the special community that makes FEMBA so great. So if you haven't registered, jump in. Christy and I have.
Yeah, register now.
We can't even understand why you haven't registered. So
there's about 24 hours left, so make sure to go online and click the registration button. And
bring your significant other and join us on Sunday.
Yep.
All right. So thank you so much. Now we're going to turn it over to the second half of our double feature and enjoy this amazing trip from London to Mongolia with Victor Gebhardt, FEMBA 2018. Thanks for listening. Enjoy this podcast. Let's just say hello. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners, Victor, and let people know kind of your prior education and you're a successful entrepreneur. We'll get a little bit of your backstory before we jump into the details of your forthcoming Mongol rally.
Sure. Thanks, Dylan, for having me here. And I guess I'll get started by saying that I graduated with a degree in history from Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo. And I had a very good time there. And after I graduated, I left and joined the Peace Corps. And I moved to Thailand. And I lived there for, the Peace Corps was 2.5-3 years. In total, I lived in Thailand for about 7 years. After the Peace Corps, I worked for a nonprofit for about 6 months, traveling around leading volunteer projects. And then after that, I started working for a web hosting company and worked my way up in the ranks within the web hosting company.
And how is your Thai?
Oh, I'm perfectly fluent. Yeah.
Wow. And did you speak any before you went?
No, I spoke none.
Really? Wow. So did you do language training with the Peace Corps prior to departing? Or?
No. So the way it works is you arrive and everyone, they move everyone to, or your group, everyone who arrives. So my group was 60 people, and they move us all into a small village, and you live with a homestay family for 2.5 months. So 10 weeks, like a quarter here at Anderson. And basically, you're just hitting the books. You're learning about the culture, learning about what you're going to be doing occupation-wise and learning language. And so you just do that for 10 weeks, and then you go by yourself to, in my case, the middle of nowhere, where nobody speaks any English, and you sort of have to make do.
Wow. And what was your assignment? What did you do?
I was a teacher collaboration community outreach. So what that means is I worked with two co-teachers to help them implement participatory education techniques. And I also traveled around the country doing teacher trainings. And then in addition, I worked with local income generation groups. So people who are, weaving scarves or sticky rice containers, stuff like that, to help them market their products.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, that is great. And then at the end of that, how did you know you wanted to stay to do the nonprofit? So 5 years you stayed. That's a long...
Yeah, 7 in total, yeah.
So 2 years in the Peace Corps.
And then an additional 5, yeah. I was looking for a job actually in Cambodia. At that point, I sort of wanted to go into nonprofit stuff or at least try it out. And so I was looking around and I found a job with a firm called the International Student Volunteers, running projects for them. And it was 2-week projects. College freshmen would come out in their summers and do, they'd want to do volunteer trips. And so, my goal was to not only supervise, the actual work that they were doing, but give them a real cultural experience, so that they could see what Thailand was really like. And so I did that in both Thailand and Vietnam.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably an impossible question, but what did you like most about, living in Thailand?
Oh, that is an impossible question. What did I like most? The easy answer is the food, because the food is just phenomenal. But I think the thing that I love is just being able to walk through, you know, society or life and being able to just interact with the people at the top end and at the bottom end, and sort of really just cut through sort of the social barriers between people and be like, okay, you know, what's going on? I used to walk down the train tracks in the slums in Bangkok and just hang out with people. And those are some of my fondest memories.
Wow. My first time abroad was living in Mexico City. I lived with a family and the food was just magnificent. My Mexican host mother, there was nothing in the refrigerator. There was nothing in the refrigerator. She would walk to the market every morning, and there were five kids and two of us exchanged students, and she would just feed us all this two-hour feast every afternoon, and it was so delicious.
It's incredible, you know, when you can get food that is that fresh, you know, that somebody nearby is growing, or that, you know, your host family is growing in that case. I miss it.
Yes. Yeah. It puts our pre-processed food in its place. So you were there. 2014 must have been a big year then. So you transitioned 7 years abroad. Mm-hmm. You say, okay, I guess I'm going to come back to the U.S.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to be a multiple entrepreneur. So tell people, like, how'd you get into being, you know, a person who's starting up their own companies? Which one did you do first? Tell people about your companies.
Sure. So I guess the first company I started was Collective Coffee. That's the name in America. It started out in Thailand, obviously. And over there, it's called the Coffee Collective. A friend of mine, we used to sit down and just share business ideas. And one day we were just, you know, hanging out, and he came to me with the idea for a coffee company. And it turned out he had all the connections. He knew people who grew, you know, sustainable coffee, direct trade coffee. He knew grocery store owners. He himself ran one of the more prestigious graphic design firms in Southeast Asia. And really, he needed somebody on the business end to be able to go through contracts, to be able to, like, do financials, stuff like that. So he asked me to be involved, and I started working with him on founding it. And we brought in another founder, and worked for about a year just on really designing the packaging, getting the marketing message right, sourcing the right product. We ended up going with a different supplier than the one he had initially envisioned. So now we have an international supply chain. You know, we're in a couple of different grocery chains, and we're about to expand into America. The second business,
Not to interrupt you too much, but you did all that before you had your MBA with your history degree.
Yes, exactly.
So you're one of these entrepreneurship is a living by learning.
Yeah, I mean,
learning by living.
The thing about life, or, you know, entrepreneurship is, it's like you just get hit with problems, right? And you continue to get hit with problems that you can't solve. You don't have the knowledge to solve. You don't know how to do it. The trick is a combination of faking it till you make it, and then just learning really quickly. And one of the things I've always been good at is, like, okay, I need to know this yesterday. I'm going to, like, pull my network together. I'm going to, you know, like, do my research and try to figure out, okay, wait, how do I do this? And that's one of the things that has been really awesome about being here at Anderson, is just the ability to sit down with teachers, even teachers that I don't have in, you know, for class currently, and just reach out to them and be like, hey, I'm not in your class. I have this problem. I have absolutely no idea how to solve this. I did this with Gonzalo Freitas not too long ago. I know nothing about international tax law. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. I reached out to the Price Center. I'm like, who can I talk to about international tax law? I don't have money to pay, you know, some international tax lawyer. You know, we're just starting out. And they were like, talk to Freitas. I reached out to him. He was very gracious. He sat down with me for an hour and a half. And talked about international tax law. And he was like, I basically gave you my international tax class in an hour and a half. But it was incredibly useful. And the professors here, across a wide spectrum, have been really useful in both my businesses.
Well, two quick shout-outs to Dean Freitas. One is, he's going to teach taking your business international at Fembapalooza. So he's going to do a learning on the lawn module.
Oh, fantastic. Wish I was here.
Yeah. Well, we're getting to where you're going to be here in just a second. You guys, it's coming. The Mongol Rally. I'm telling you, I've never heard anything crazy like this. Oh, okay. It's coming. And then the other thing is with his flex delivery, he now has a kind of build your own ending to his international tax class where he has three different tracks depending on what your interest is. So he's one of the architects of the flex delivery, and then he's specifically to that point, customizing how people can really get, you know, and that's different from just having a one-on-one half office consult. So he's an amazing human being. So tell us about your other business that you founded. So
sure. So I had a friend from Peace Corps. We served in Thailand together, and he worked for the UN for a bit as a consultant. He got his degree in development practice, master's in development practice, and then moved to India to work there. And so I went to visit him, and he was working on a Berkeley Big Ideas application. And that's a competition for sort of big, sustainable ideas that can change things. And he asked me to work on the application with him. So I did, and we ended up winning and getting a small amount of seed funding to start up this business. And so the idea is that with a business, it's really easy to see if it's successful or not, right? Are you making money? Aren't you making money? Are you losing money? Is there growth, et cetera? But when you talk about nonprofits, NGOs, it's very difficult to actually see, are you helping people? How much are you helping people? Yeah. If I'm a philanthropist and I want to give money to a nonprofit and I'm looking at three nonprofits, how do I know where I get the most bang for my buck? And currently, there's a lot of sort of work in the econometrics field about how do you measure impact. But a lot of that is kept pretty tightly in the academic sphere. And the idea was to build a tech platform that would bring that to nonprofits. And so it's a platform that basically helps nonprofits design projects around measuring impact. It helps them measure that impact, and then it helps them go out and get funding with that measurement. And so that's what we're working on now. I was brought in because I have a tech background. I know with my history degree, but I was working in the web hosting industry. And so, with my development experience as well as my tech background, it meant that, I could oversee prototype development on that project.
Well, this is all good. So, if this was a normal podcast, we might say, well, you have sort of a nonprofit, you have a non-typical background, you didn't have a Fortune 500 precursor to school, you had this extended stay in Southeast Asia, and that's all wonderful, and that would be a little bit out of the norm. But now let's just pivot to the real reason for the podcast, which is you reached out to me to let me know that you're doing something incredibly incredible, which is this Mongol Rally. So that's the backstory. I hope you guys enjoyed that. This is a human being who's very interesting, very accomplished, making stuff happen. But wait till you hear what he's up to now. So let's kind of go through the what, the why, the how. Tell me about this summer adventure that you were about to embark on, because everyone on the podcast, you're going to be able to follow Victor's journey over the next couple of months. So let's jump on in.
So I sort of thought, I'm entering my MBA. It's time to grow up. Like the time for adventures is over, and it's like I got to get down to school. I got to get serious with my career. And then a friend of mine contacted me about something that had been on my bucket list for a while, and he said, "I'm doing it this summer. Are you in?" And I had to say yes.
It being the Mongol Rally.
It being the Mongol Rally. So the Mongol Rally is basically there are three rules. You drive a car from London to Mongolia.
You heard this. So, Brexit, they just left the EU. So he's going to go to London.
Correct.
And he's going to drive a car to Mongolia.
Yes.
Mongolia is not part of Great Britain.
No.
Not part of Western Europe.
It's about 10,000 miles away.
Okay. Just wanted to nail that point. Okay.
Yeah. So that's sort of the first thing is you start in London, end in Mongolia. The second thing is you can't do it in any car. You have to do it in a tiny car.
A tiny car. So what is a tiny car?
So the rules say that the engine can be no larger than a liter. In our case, that means we're doing it in a Nissan Micra, which we don't have in the States, but it's a 60 horsepower car.
So for people who don't know about engines, how many American cars can you buy in the store with a 1 liter engine?
Oh, I have no idea. Maybe like one. Maybe none.
Like a smart car, maybe?
Smart cars are mostly electric, but yeah, it's a subcompact, you know, a very tiny car.
Like if you don't know about engines, I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
Oh, yeah, not a problem.
But that's a big motorcycle, but it's not a big, I mean, it's a non-existent U.S. delivered car. It's like a big go-kart.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, it's a tiny car. It's the kind of car your grandmother would drive to the grocery store.
Yeah, it's kind of like the old, the Mr. Bean cars or something like this.
Yeah, it was actually sort of hard to find the car because they don't make cars that small anymore. So our car was made in 2000, so it's a 16-year-old car.
You're driving a 16-year-old, less than 1 liter car, 10,000 miles. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, a couple of deserts, like four mountain ranges. I don't see any problem here.
Okay, what's the third rule?
The third rule is you have to raise 1,000 British pounds for charity.
All right.
And currently we're 88% there.
1,000 British pounds for charity. So, okay, I don't know what the exchange rate is currently. But
well, I mean, it dipped quite recently, unfortunately.
Yeah, it just changed on the start of the week.
Yeah.
All right, so there's these three components. And you said yes to this. Your friend called you, he asked you.
Yeah.
You said yes, this has been on my bucket list, and now is the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, it made sense. This was...
Tell me more about this.
Timing-wise, it was in summer.
Right.
I run my own businesses, and they're, at the point, they were set up to be fairly self-sustaining,
Right.
Unfortunately, we decided to come into America, and we just got our first order for America. So that's happening right now. I'm trying to set everything up before I leave. We will have internet in some of these countries, so that's good. I'm setting everything up to run on its own. But I got a job doing consulting work for a real estate firm after I decided to do this. And they were very gracious. They said, we'll hire you, and also you can do the Mongol Rally.
Cool.
Yeah, we'll give you that time off. So, it all sort of made sense. I had people to go with. One of the guys is a mechanic. I wasn't in school, and my job gave me the time off. So, yeah.
And what's your charity of choice?
We're raising it for Cool Earth, which is a charity that helps Peruvian rainforest tribes do rainforest conservation and sort of prevent illegal logging. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. All right, because everybody on the podcast, you're going to be able to contribute to this 10,000-mile journey. Okay, all right. So and tell me about your teammates. So there's three of you?
Yep, three of us. One of them is my former boss who ran the web hosting company. He's an entrepreneur himself. He's starting a number of other businesses right now. The other one is a mutual friend of ours from college, and he's the mechanic.
Yeah, so talk about, you said when we talked the other day, you talked about your first responder certified. So talk about the skill sets the three of you bring to this endeavor.
Yeah, so I am a wilderness first responder. I got my certification. It's a 90-hour certification approximately. During spring break, I went up to San Francisco, but they also offer it here at UCLA. I just happened to be in San Francisco for spring break. That allows you to deal with things like broken bones, snake bites, whatever. So I wanted to make sure that I would be prepared for any sort of medical contingencies. So I guess I'm the medic of the group. My friend Noah, he's the mechanic. Our friend Arvond is the third member, and he is the adventurer. He's the guy who enables it all to happen.
Noah, Victor, and Arvond?
You're correct.
Arvond. All right. Okay. And 10,000 miles. So tell me, now there's a couple different routes you can take. You were telling me you guys are going to peruse the southern route. Is that
correct? Yeah. So in those three sort of rules that they lay out, they don't give you a route to take. You can go any way you want. There's no support. There's no medic following you guys. There's nobody to...
There's no sag wagon there?
Yeah, there's nothing. You know, there's nobody. If you get stuck in the middle of a river, there's nobody to tow you out. You got to figure it out all yourself. And that's sort of the idea. And the idea is you're driving this really tiny car and it will break down. And you'll have to deal with it and interact with locals and figure things out. So you, in doing that, London to Mongolia, you can go a number of different routes. Obviously, my first Google search was War Zones 2016. So mark those on a map. So that sort of precludes Northern Africa. And it also precludes going through Ukraine. So what you're left with is either going through Scandinavia and then entering Russia that way. You can go straight through Europe. And then enter Russia through sort of Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, or you can go basically the southern route, which is you go straight through Europe till you hit Romania, you go south through Turkey, and then you can either go straight through Iran. We didn't want to go through Iran, so we are going up through the Baltics, taking a ferry over the Caspian, and then going through all the stands, a little into Russia, and then down into Mongolia.
My goodness. So to put 10,000 miles in perspective, that's across America, back across America. So it's San Francisco to New York, New York, San Francisco back to New York, roughly.
I would assume. I've never made that ride.
I think it's about 3,000 miles across our small continent.
Wow.
And you're going to go 10,000 miles.
Yeah. So it's going to take us about, I want to say, 7 weeks. Then another thing that was on my bucket list was riding on the Trans-Siberian Railroad. So we're going to drop off the car in Mongolia and then get on the Trans-Siberian from Mongolia to Moscow. And then a bunch of FEMBAs are doing the study abroad in Berlin this year. And so they're going to be flying to Munich and doing Oktoberfest. And they've invited me to do Oktoberfest. So at the end, I will fly to Munich and meet them for Oktoberfest. And then fly back here and have 3 days and then class starts.
That's amazing. Have you been to Oktoberfest before?
I have not.
Yeah, I worked 3 years in Munich, so, and I moved there during Oktoberfest.
Oh, wow.
And I moved home 3 years later during October, so I actually got, I squeezed 4 Oktoberfests into a 3-year. Into a 3-year period with Siemens there. So it's an amazing, the scale of that is it's impressive. Yeah, if you look up just the, how many chickens are eaten, how much beer is consumed.
I've looked up some of the statistics, and it's just mind-boggling.
Yes, it's very German, very organized. And the tents, you know, they're not tents. They're these massive structures with canvas walls that'll hold 5,000 people a pop. And there's 10 of them down the Wiesn there. My goodness. So how do you, so 7 weeks. Now, how many hours a day are you driving?
We're probably going to be driving between 8 and 10 hours a day. Though we've budgeted in some time, to stop over in different cities. And, you know, like we're going to be spending 3 days in Istanbul, for example. I mean, the thing is, like, in some places, surprising places, the roads are great. So, like, for example, certain areas of Uzbekistan have awesome roads. And then in other areas like Kazakhstan, you can't go faster than 10, maybe 15 miles an hour. The other thing that's going to be a bit of a challenge is that we bought the car in the UK, and it's a manual, so it's on the other side of, you know...
You have to shift
with your left hand, but most of the route once you, or all the route once you exit the UK, is on the American side of the road.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so...
So you're going to be having to steer, or, I mean... yourself from across.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, I definitely rode a motorcycle in Thailand, so I'm used to being on that side of the road, or, you know, like different sides of the road doing different kinds of things. But this will definitely be, I think, a challenge, especially the first couple of days.
And do you guys, I mean, so everybody's all plugged in 24/7, so you're going to be kind of unplugged, or what kind of technology do you have or do you not have?
Sure. So I use Google Fi, which is it's like Google's carrier. And it brings together, I think, Sprint, T-Mobile, and U.S. Cellular. And so they allow global roaming, which covers 15 of the 20 countries we're going through. And so we'll have relatively slow internet in 15 of those countries, and then, you know, stopping for Wi-Fi if we can find it.
Wow.
Yeah. We have, you know, there will be a lot of hostels, but there's going to be a lot of camping, especially once we get out of Europe. So we have solar-powered lights, so solar-powered lanterns. And we have a backpacking stove that runs off unleaded gasoline.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
This is great. Okay, you're young, and this is awesome, and this is what you do when you...
This is what you do.
This is what you do.
Yeah.
Okay, and then I don't think we told people, so how many teams are participating?
So it's approximately 300 teams, I think 800 total participants. This is the largest year for the Mongol Rally ever. It's put on by the Adventurists, and they're a group that sort of throw these adventure-like events, where you pretty much have to do it yourself. You know, they have one where you ride a horse or a series of horses through Genghis Khan's old mail route, over 1,000 kilometers, yeah. Another one's called the Rickshaw Run, which is from north to south India, and you have to do it in a rickshaw. They're a pretty cool organization.
Wow.
But, you know, none of this is for the faint of heart, that's for sure.
So, you know, how do you prepare yourself mentally? So what's the game you want to win? How are you going to know if you won? Or how are you going to know if you failed? Do you even think about it like that? Is it more just the experience is going to be what the experience is going to be?
Well, it's like life in general, which is that success is how you define it. It's not a race. That's the first thing. But I guess the second thing is it's important when going into anything to really realize why you're there, why you're doing it, what you hope to get out of it. And I really realized that when doing the Peace Corps. I went into the Peace Corps to do, not to save the world, not to help people, but to just challenge myself and grow and learn. If I help some people in the meantime, that's great. But those were my primary goals. And I think I've kept those going forward, is to challenge myself, you know, and to grow and to learn about myself. And that's why I'm here at Anderson. But that's also why I'm doing the Mongol rallies, you know, again, to try to challenge myself. Yeah.
How will you choose to chronicle? Will you keep a diary? Will it be a photo? I mean,
We have a website, friskydingo.rocks, and our team is called Frisky Dingo, and we're going to be uploading video, short written pieces and photos. And we're going to be doing that as much as we can, depending on how the internet is. Probably the videos will come later as we get better internet, but we'll see.
Or maybe after the event.
Yeah, after the event, we'll edit everything. But the photos should come pretty much in real time as we're going through it. Give or take, you know, Mongolia, there's no internet, and we're going to be in Mongolia for 10 to 14 days. And there's just, like, it's there aren't really any roads. So, I mean, there are roads, but we're just going to be driving through grassland. So we're not going to have an opportunity when we're in Mongolia to upload anything.
Oh, so you're going to be off of a highway for 10 to 14 days.
Yeah, so there's sort of dirt paths that then disappear, and you have to cross rivers and streams. Hopefully the water flow isn't too high. Mongolia is a harsh place. We couldn't do this in winter. In winter, it gets to something like negative 30, negative 40, your tears freeze on your face, that kind of thing. So that's why you go to Mongolia in the summer. But even still, the infrastructure is not quite built up, you know, to take you all the way across.
Oh my goodness. Okay, I'm exhausted just listening. And you're gonna do this for almost 2 months is kind of the basic.
Yeah. The total adventure will be about 2 months, because afterward we'll be on the Trans-Siberian Railroad, which is no picnic.
So that'll bring you back to Germany.
That'll bring me to Moscow. Then I fly to Germany.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Train to Moscow, fly to Germany, connect with some FEMBAs at Oktoberfest.
Yeah, and then fly back.
And then be back for the first day of your second year.
Yeah, get over my jet lag and boom, class.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Victor, I've run out of questions. You've exhausted my imagination, and that's an amazing thing. I love it. How can people support you? How can people follow you? We'll put this into the notes when we post the podcast. We'll have friskydingo.rocks, your website.
Great, yeah. And so we also have a fundraising website, which we'll link to both in on our website, friskydingo.rocks, R-O-C-K-S. Yeah, in addition, we'll provide a direct link, I hope, in the footnotes to this podcast, where you can donate directly to Cool Earth. None of that money comes to us. It all just goes directly to Cool Earth. And we're trying to raise as much money as we can. So even if we're at 100%, and I hope we're at it, we hope to go beyond that. We're going to be raising money along our route. And so, yeah, both from people at home and people who we pass.
Well, anything else about the Mongol Rally that we should let our listeners know about?
I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. Well, and this is a non sequitur totally, but anything, because you're our first non-2016 recent graduate, you've completed the first year. Anything you'd want to share with the people who are 1 year behind you in FEMBA, so the entering class of 2019, any lessons learned from your first year that you might want to pay forward to them?
Sure. For me, a large part of the value of the MBA is the network that you're creating. And that network includes your fellow students in your section, out of your section, future years, past years, and also staff. And so I'd really recommend trying to engage the Anderson community as much as possible. Go to the happy hours, go to the events, talk with people, and pick people's brains. Most people, staff included, are really open, really supportive, really willing to talk about what they do and give you advice, you know, if you're starting your own business or you've come across a problem in your job or just in your life that you need help with. And so, yeah, that's what I'd say.
Well, I love it. And the evidence is in. You know, you found Professor Fracius and his expertise for you know, international taxation and international growth, and your both of your companies are now becoming global enterprises, and you're about to have a 20-country personal experience after having lived in Thailand for 7 years. So thank you for being such a wonderful representative of America. You're a real global citizen.
Thank you.
And it's amazing, and we're going to be following you with our fingers crossed and slightly holding our breath, but you're ready to go. Mm-hmm. And you're going to let us know. We're going to watch and learn and see postings, and then we'll welcome you back. I don't know. We have to have some Saturday morning. I don't know what our version of a ticker tape parade might be, but you will have left the car in Mongolia, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. We're actually shipping it to Estonia, where we're scrapping it.
Okay. You probably never, ever want to see that car again.
A lot of the cars don't have their doors by the time they're done, so yeah.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I've never conducted a podcast nearly as off the grid. So this is Victor Gebhardt. We will put his links and connections on the website. Thank you so much for catalyzing this conversation, and I can't wait to follow your journey.
Thank you.
All right.